Author of the Week on Literary Lusts, brought to you by Radio Gorgeous.
Welcome, Helen Fitzgerald, to Radio Gorgeous.
Thank you very much. Lovely to be here.
Occasion of the publication date of Viral.
I know. This is the big day that I've been waiting for about 18 months, and then it comes and it's like, oh. But I already had that book. You know, it's not like having a baby where it's a new thing.
Yeah,
but it's exciting. I've been really, I'm really excited about this book, actually, because I had such fun writing it. I mean, it was just a euphoric experience. It was kind of 2 months over Christmas, December 2014, and I just stayed in a room upstairs for like 2 months and just, you know, got it out really, really fast. It was a great fun thing to write. So hopefully it's a good fun thing to read.
I was going to say, well, I think the plot of the book can be easily summed up by the tagline on the front, which says, "What if the worst thing you did went viral?" Mm. And for one of the characters in the book, that's exactly what happens. Could you introduce us to the characters in the book, though?
Yeah, well, the character Sue is 18 years old, and she was adopted from South Korea, and her mother, soon after bringing her home to Scotland, got pregnant, which is a story that I know of in real life back in Australia, where a woman who had adopted... I was working in a cafe, and there was a gynecologist's office upstairs, and this woman came in and had a coffee, and she was very heavily pregnant, had a beautiful black baby that she had adopted, on, I can't remember where from. And she was besotted and also surprised and excited that she'd miraculously gotten pregnant after years of trying. The next time that I saw that woman, she was on the news because social workers had taken the adopted baby away, saying exactly what happens in my book with Sue's mother, because the same thing happens to her. She gets pregnant afterwards, saying that she wouldn't cope with two babies so close in age, that issues about cultural identity and so forth would, you know, that she wouldn't cope with that, wouldn't manage it. And I never knew whether she managed to get that baby back because she was fighting to. So I was interested in that family dynamic. I thought, how interesting if you've got one adopted child and one biological child very close in age, in the same year at school, and how would that sort of have an impact on mother-daughter relationships and sibling rivalry, which I'm really interested in, being one of 12 children, having lots of rivalry, having had to leave the country, really, to get away from it, because I live in the UK.
I'll do you one better. Moving to Scotland.
Yes. So that's Sue. Sue's 18, and she and Leah have just finished school, and they decide to go to Magaluf on their school leavers trip. As I was writing this, as I sat down to write this, my daughter had just finished school and was going off to Magaluf with her friends. So parental panic set in after I started Googling Magaluf and watching shows like Magaluf Weekender and Sun See Suspicious Parents. And I sort of thought, rightio, I'll channel my energy rather than, you know, just panic. There's nothing you can do. You've just got to trust your children, I think, you know, that hopefully they and their friends will look out for each other, which my daughter just did, thankfully. So I sat down and wrote Viral. So it's about Sue and Leah that go to Magaluf. Sue is a virgin and Leah is not. And Leah's the sort of wild, crazy one. And she's always... And they've not been getting on for years, which I think is just a pretty natural thing for teenage girls. The mum, Ruth, says, right, you can go, but as long as Sue goes too, because she's the sensible one and she'll look after you. After 2 weeks in Magaluf, and Sue, as I said, is a virgin, Leah is determined, and they're all determined, Sue included, that Sue will lose her virginity in Magaluf and have a sort of no-strings-attached experience and get it over with before she goes to university. On the last night of the 2 weeks, she still hasn't managed to pull. She's feeling really shit about herself and really hates the whole place. And the sort of behaviour that goes on there, the games that the PR guys play, which are just meat market, treating women absolutely abominably in these bars where they're sort of spitting through straws to aiming for nipples. And it's just a horrendous kind of environment. I know, horrible. But after 2 weeks, I think it can become normal. I mean, if that's what you're doing day after day, and I think that's what happens to Sue, as well as the fact that she is completely rat-assed on this last night and ends up performing this sex act in a bar that somebody films and uploads and it goes viral. So that leaves Ruth, the mother, back at home, who is a sheriff, which is a judge in Scotland, who is very used to the clear-cut law, you know, and being able to administer it. You know, there's a crime, there's a punishment, bang, the hammer's down, that's it, done. In the situation where her daughter, her life is in tatters, she's no longer got her place at university, the whole family, and she's hiding in Spain, too scared to come home, leaves her mother trying to think, well, who's to blame here and what can I do about it?
You can rely on Radio Gorgeous.
And she is a fierce mama bear.
Yes, I love her.
from that early experience of desperately wanting a child, adopting a child, ending up with two children, and having to fight for Sue. Mm. And there are dynamics in the family, and this one incident sort of blows things apart. Because, like any family, as you were saying, the siblings, they've sort of carved out spheres of influence. Mm. This one's the studious one, the good girl. This one's the wild one, you know. And this breaks down those barriers, both self-imposed and imposed upon each other. This really... incidents like this really break that apart.
Yeah, so the dynamic in this family was fascinating to me because I thought you've got a mum who fought for Sue when she was a baby. She fought and she won and she got Sue back. In the meantime, she's pregnant, and her whole pregnancy and the birth and the bonding and breastfeeding and everything that, you know, would have tied her comfortably to Leah, her second daughter, her biological daughter, is kind of, you know... Well, she feels guilty about it. Whether or not actually it happened, she feels bad about it. And it's been an issue. And she's always felt, because there was such criticism of her parenting and of her ability to parent someone from a different culture and with different coloured skin, she's constantly battling to prove that I can do this, you know. So when this happens and when Sue has done this thing, she's back in fight mode immediately.
And it's almost this compensation of, like, I'm going to love her more.
Yes, and I think that must happen. I mean, I know my...
Both happen.
Yeah, think, yeah.
You know?
And I think people would usually assume that if you had one biological child and one adopted, that it would be the other way around. I don't think that is always the case, you know, and people will... Parents are constantly guilt-ridden, aren't they, trying to do the right thing. Oh, my God, I'm a bad mother, and trying to rebalance things. And I think it felt natural to me that Ruth would feel... Well, I've already got that with Leah, that biological thing, so I don't
That's
need to work. That's a given. What I need to work on is to make sure that Sue is okay. And obviously, because everybody in the initial months of her life didn't believe that I could do it, I am going to prove that I can do it, you know?
Mm. So, which puts pressure.
Yes, a lot of pressure.
Well, also, I think that's the nexus of shame is guilt.
Mm.
And this is... all about shame. It really put me in mind of The Scarlet Letter.
Me too. Yeah.
You know, that public naming and shaming, outing someone in their shame and their wrongness.
Mm.
But our shame circle, like everything else, has gone global.
I know, and how I was absolutely. I always think of that book, you know, and now, you know, she's wearing a scarlet letter, but it's in everyone's room as well. Her with her scarlet letter on, you know, that was my whole point of the book, really, of, you know, so suddenly someone who has defined herself in a certain, you know, with a certain number of, in a certain number of ways, you know, I'm Sue, I'm studious, I'm adopted, I'm, you know, the daughter of a judge, I'm the sister of a wild girl, all this sort of stuff comes into question, because suddenly she's now Sue, who performed a sex act in a bar in Magaluf, and that is how she's known. So the whole book felt quite naturally to me was just about, how does she define herself now? How does she move on or incorporate that definition into her life? Like in The Scarlet Letter, she kind of wears it proudly in the end. You know, okay, yeah, that's now part of...
I'm working the A.
Yeah, I'm working that A. I'm working that C, those 12 Cs. So, I mean, it would have been really easy for me to go into a sort of vigilante sheriff kind of thing. And there's a tiny element of that, but
there's a flirtation.
Yeah,
that,
but absolutely. I had a big poster on my wall in front of me as I was writing it. Do not kill anyone. Do not. This is not a story about a murder. You know, this is a story about shame. So it was all about Sue's struggle after that to redefine herself or to know who she is. Who am I? Am I that girl? Am I who they say I am? And also the family's rejigging and coming to terms with that.
Follow us on Twitter, radio_gorgeous. Lots of love, darlings. Mwah.
And then also, you know, aside from this, tragedy strikes as well.
Yeah.
And how that redefines a family and everyone's roles. And because it really does ask the question, what is family? What is identity? Because for Sue, she's really searching for that in a natural way that a young woman of her age searches, a young person of that age searches for your identity. Who am I? That you add in the adoption question. Who am I? Who? What am I capable of? What came out of me when I'm drunk? Is that me? Is that not me? Is that... What am I saying?
I think it empowers her. I mean, I wanted it in the end, you know, because... I think at that age anyway, when you leave, she's about to go off to college. You know, my daughter, as I said, was on her trip, and then she left for university, and she's in St. Andrews now. So it's a time when you absolutely, I mean, I think it's a really tough time, actually, a really tough time. And it's all about self-questioning. And Leah, you know, it would have been, and the other friends are all going through similar things. But I don't know why I've always been interested in adoption. I think because I just find it really fascinating, and I've known people who have gone through looking for their really close friends, actually, who at that age, exactly, one of my best friends decided to look for her birth mother.
Well, and as one of 12, you just think it's really romantic to be adopted.
Yeah.
To be able to get away from these people.
I know, and I kind of looked different from all the rest of my siblings, and I was always a question
Fingers
mark.
Crossed. Please tell me I'm adopted.
Yeah, there's something almost sort of... you know, glamorous or else, or just interesting and other.
Exactly, so get out flaws.
Yeah, yeah.
You know.
Just, and a whole sort of race issue I found very sort of nerve, I was nervous about writing about it. I had wanted to for years, but I just felt as a white woman, what can I be saying? Mm. How can I get into her head? And I went on a lot of forums and things of people who'd been adopted from South Korea and listened to what they were saying to each other and watched and read everything that I could about it. And in the end, I just thought, well, Sue's been brought up in Scotland. She's got this family. You know, just go with it. Just, you know, she's a person. She's got obviously a lot of other issues going on. But I just tried to sort of get over my nervousness about writing her character.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'm still a little bit nervous talking about it, which is interesting, but that's probably made me want to write about it.
I was going to say, they are interesting issues. I mean, you know, brought up, you know, famously by, you know, Madonna and Angelina Jolie adopting children from around the world, but that's always been an issue. I mean, and that's been an issue in the UK, whether you're allowed to adopt children out of their race cultures, and it has not been allowed. I remember talking to one woman, Harriet Sargent, she said, well, you talk to any black kid sitting in jail, and it's like, well, I would rather deal with some cultural issues than have the shit, the shit that I'm putting up
I
with
know.
Now.
Yeah, that's...
You know, so it's like, I don't know, maybe we could look at the bigger pictures and maybe we could not be so closed in our ideas of culture. But then again, these are big issues and we have to face them. If things like this can go viral and someone like Kim Kardashian's ass can... quote unquote, break the internet. Well, then some of those cultural boundaries are broken down and everyone is experiencing that. Anyone with, you know, access to the internet is then now experiencing that. Well, that does make us different and that does make those sort of national, racial, where all those boundaries...
I'm sort of breaking down.
Yeah.
At the same time, you know, Sue's grown up in the west of Scotland in a small town where she's the only person who's not white, you know, and so it's not...
You don't look like anyone else.
No, can't be ignored. Yeah.
Exactly, and that does inform you, and you are informed by that all the time.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think... and her parents do, you know, what they would encourage all parents to do, which is really, let's try and find out as much as we can before, you know, let's go back there, we'll visit there, let's teach you the language, let's, you know, make sure that you don't feel we have completely cut you off from your cultural roots, but... really, you know, she learned three lines of Korean and that was about it. And, you know, just... so it's a really great big question mark for her, and that makes for a great character to write, I think.
Exactly. And I think what happens to most of the characters in the book, because it starts with guilt and shame, the other part of that is responsibility. And owning what you do, owning who you are, you know, and just take your bedraggled, beautiful self and keep on walking with your head high. And that's part of growing up. And you sort of specialize like Shirley Conran, I would say, and she did it quite purposefully, is writing books just a slight bit older than the age of these girls, because we are aspirational. We're aspirational in the stories we want to read, and we're aspirational in the stories we want to know. We all want to be, you know, that at that age, or this, that little bit older. We want to be adults. And I think, what is that an interesting time for you? Is that
oh, absolutely. What is it about that? And I actually have tried to write. Yeah, you know, I did a couple of young adult books, thinking, well, that I'm naturally drawn to that. I think, I think it's just a fascinating period. It's probably also because I had a daughter going through that, you know, which is as difficult for her as it was for me, you know. So I've always been drawn to that age group, because there is so much going on. The world is at your feet, and you could go in any direction. And also, you are still the center of the universe, you know, and so it makes for a great protagonist, because I am the, you know, the, I'm going to be the investigator, I'm going to be the victim, I'm going to be the perpetrator, everything, you know. What I did was I wrote a couple of young adult, and when I specifically tried to write young adult, I completely lost my mojo, because, and I realized I don't believe in young adult fiction. I don't believe my daughter, well, I couldn't get her to read, you know, she wasn't interested in reading, although she loves language. And then I caught her one day reading Dante's Inferno in Italian, and I thought, rightio, I've been aiming at the wrong level. You know, she really wasn't wanting that.
I'm dumbing this girl down.
Yes. And I think maybe the books I wrote, anyway, I was doing that. I was sort of dumbing down. I was trying to be a teenager. And I thought, no, I just need to, like you say, put a bit of an older head in there, because I think that I was like that at that age, and that my daughter was too. And then what we were drawn to read, what we were drawn to do, were adult things. So, I mean, I'm hoping that you know, 16, 17-year-olds will read this book, because I think it's a... I'll be good for them, for that age group.
Radio Gorgeous, the sexist station where you'll only hear the female voice.
What happens to Sue is involuntary pornography. I think that's what I've been calling it anyway. It's not revenge pornography, because she's in public, which means that she has no right to privacy, so it's not going to be something that you could prosecute. Also, she's overseas. She's 18. In the film, she's saying yes, she's giving consent, even though she's completely off her head, which, you know, I would argue she's not, and her mum argues she's not giving consent. This is practically a gang rape, you know, a gang sexual assault. But it's not revenge pornography, which is illegal now in England and Wales, which is good. You know, last year a law came in so that if someone publishes intimate photographs of you without your consent, with intent to cause distress, you can be prosecuted and you can get up to 2 years in prison.
It's like, so you sent a sex selfie.
Yeah, your boyfriend, you had a video when you were... Yeah, so that is... And it's not in Scotland yet, but they're talking about it, you know. But there's going to be, you know, so that's one thing, and that's great that that's illegal now, you know, and hopefully ex-boyfriends will now think twice before they do that. But in something like this, in terms of a public act... That's just another step, which I hope eventually will also, you know, who are you going to tell off, though? I mean, it's difficult, isn't it?
It is us.
Yes, exactly. It's all of us.
We
it's
are
everyone.
All prurient. Yeah. We all watch. I mean, I remember, you know, when Jennifer Lawrence, her phone was tapped. And I read an article in Vanity Fair about her, and two things struck me. One, because I didn't even think about it, and I don't really look for naked pictures of people. but if I had come across them, I would have looked.
I know.
And she said, you know, and I wouldn't have even
thought
about it.
Would you have ever shared something like that, though? So you've looked, would you ever say, oh, look what I've just seen?
No. Probably not. Yeah. However, the fact that I would just say, I wasn't, she did not ask me to look at those.
I know.
And she said people even close to her was like, yeah, she saw, and we didn't even think about it. And of course, I didn't think about it.
Yeah.
The other thing she said that was very upsetting, and I want to get into this with you, is that, well, you know, if I was in a long-distance relationship, and if I didn't send pictures myself, he would just be looking at someone else. I'm like, so it's mandatory to be looking at porn now? Like, that's part of, you like, you know, wait 2 days?
Yeah.
Wait 3 weeks? You know what I mean?
Yeah, the long distance thing must make that much more rife, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, but...
But yeah, that's a weird notion.
That's
it's about men's needs being, you know...
But we are all participatory in this. And even my son, who, you know, giggles at, you know, like, insanely, you've been framed.
Yeah.
I said to him, I fell off my bike the other day, and someone, you know, someone actually asked me if I was okay, and then seriously pointed and laughed. And I said, like, really hard. And then she was laughing and drove off laughing. And I said, it made me feel terrible.
Yes.
And I said, but that's the same thing. That's what we're doing.
Yeah, I know.
And it's funny when it's someone else, and then it's all of a sudden not so funny when it's you. But you looked.
Yeah. I know. And that's Ruth's point, the mother in this book. She's like, okay, we've got the people in the bar. There's a whole bar full of people where a girl is doing something obviously that she's going to regret, and she is obviously completely off her head.
You're like, someone.
No one.
Help that girl.
Would you? I mean, I'm thinking to myself, please, God, I would have got down there and said, hey, come with me. Let's
get
some
air. Trashed I was, to be honest.
Well, that's
being
the
honest
thing.
Here, yeah.
Well, you know, maybe I wouldn't have. You know,
yeah,
I don't know.
Who knows?
Because I do, as you said, you do look at things. You look at things, so that's, we are all part of it, you know. But you've got the guy, the people in the bar, the people who've set up the whole scenarios with the drinks thing, you know, the games that they're playing, the way that women are treated over there. Then you've got the people, the guy who uploads it, who's the top of the list for her in terms of who's done the wrongest thing here. He has put it on the internet, you know. And then the people who are sharing it and liking it, and the rest of the world, you know,
yeah.
Which is the rest, in this case, almost the rest of the world.
RadioGorgeous.com.
So, yeah. It would be a difficult one to...
Well, but you can't... I don't know, just... We seem to have this idea, and it goes back to that... You know, and I guess the Scarlet Letter used to, you know, or was an attempt to not make us act, or, you know, sort of curb our desires. But, you know, you can't get away from the fact that things are there.
Mm.
And it's how you respond to them being there.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't seem to be able to say, well, because Candy Crush is on my phone, I must play it 24 hours a day.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
There seems to be even...
No self-controls with people. Yeah,
that
I know.
Seems to be going... slipping further and further, because more and more is available, then more and more I should do it.
Mm. Yeah, I know. I mean, it's like, I feel like it's all about education at the moment.
Mm.
It's sort of sex education. I was thinking about... the sort of bases that we've had, right?
Yes,
you know, you have
first bases, kissing,
kissing above the waist, below the waist, home run. The fifth one, the photo shoot. You know, the camera comes out, the phone comes out. You are feeling really horny. You love this guy, maybe. Or, you know, you must trust this guy because look what you're doing together. It's fantastic. The moment is so amazing that, you know, it's quite hard, I think, to not do it. It's sexy.
Yeah.
It's horny, you know, and oh my God,
well,
my body must be amazing.
This.
You know.
Well, you know, I mean, you know, there is, you know, an incredible intimacy and you a unique feeling, and we are one, and of course we want to document that.
Yeah, and then you
that
know,
feels natural.
You split up, that doesn't go any further, and there you are on the internet. And I feel it's almost like, you know, I was talking about education, but that kids need to be taught like they have been about that moment's really, really exciting, and you might not reach for the condom. Please reach for the condom. Please reach for the condoms. You know, the condoms in your bag.
As no glove, no love.
Yeah. And I think, you know, actually the younger generation didn't grow up in the kind of, you know, with the grim
the
reaper.
The phone in the kitchen.
Yeah. They're not as good at it nowadays. They have lost what we had in our generation, which was a fear of disease and a fear of, you know.
It's true.
Yeah.
Maybe Zika virus will be good.
Well.
Maybe there's an upside to this sexually transmitted disease thing.
Yeah, I mean, we did grow up with absolute condom, and our generation need to grow up with that, yes, but also with don't let the guy take the photograph.
Or don't take it yourself.
Or don't take it yourself.
Don't be a willing participant.
Yeah. Just
it's hard.
Well,
it's
I think it's a difficult thing to do because the moment it's become a part of sex.
Yeah.
And so, you know, girls are and women are putting themselves at risk doing that, you know, and with the Skype and everything as well, you know.
Yeah.
I don't know whether you can do screenshots of Skype, but maybe.
Yes,
okay.
So.
So, you're putting yourself at risk doing that, and there's a lot of potential harm that could come to you, even if you think, well, so what, it's just my body.
Yeah.
See, when everyone is seeing your body and talking about
your
body.
Well, also, other people are selling their sex tapes and getting a lot of money for them.
Well, yeah, you know, if you're doing that, then fine, you know, if you're in control. But if suddenly you find that, well, the problem is that the trolls and misogyny online is so scary and dangerous that, you know, women get rape threats and get called, just the stuff that will come out after something like this happens to you is scary, in a life-threatening.
And it becomes the same rationale as, well, you were bending over, you were asking for it.
Yeah, that's right. You know? Yeah, well, Sue was drunk.
You were wearing lacy underwear. Yeah, you asked for it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's all the same sort of
you
stuff.
You made me do that.
Yeah, yeah.
You heard that, right?
Yeah.
You made me. Yeah. I mean, okay. Yeah.
Yeah, that's...
Language is there for a reason, people. But, yeah. Mm. Excellent. So, what are you exploring next? Because you take on... What am I trying to say? Contemporary problems.
Yeah.
So what are you tackling now?
Well, I've just sort of been trying to start one. I have written sort of 30 pages. I hope my agent isn't listening because I've said it so close. I'll get it to you tomorrow. You know? But I was really interested in the Ashley Madison case. And I thought it sounds a little bit old-fashioned, and I will do everything I can to not be preachy. But I'm writing something about a young girl, again, who's sort of 10 years after, or 9 years after, she has hacked into an affair website to out her mother and the other people in the suburb where she lives and which she hates. And the fallout from this is horrendous. So that's what I'm working on at the moment. It's very early stages. And I think I'm going to call it I Bet You Die. Because she ends up on... I've been reading a lot about the dark net and about the assassination market and things like that on the dark net where you bet on a person's date of their death and you put amount of money on it, which incentivizes it for that person to be killed on that day because then you get the pot. So... So this story is about a girl who's hurt a lot of people by what she did, which she just did thinking it was a
well. In that same moment of that teenager being a, you know, I am the center of the universe and that righteous anger.
Yeah, no, exactly. That's her. Yeah. So I mean, I guess I'm obsessed by the internet at the moment, you could say, but also I feel it's almost going to be impossible for me to not include it. I don't want to have to spend the first chapter getting rid of the phone signal. You know, it's there.
It's like when people have their phones.
Yeah, honestly, every crime book I'm reading is like, oh, it's dropped in the water. Oh, we're on a hill. You know, you have to, but just go with it, guys. Have it.
Yeah.
Use it in a different way because that's just,
you know,
life as well now, isn't it? Like you said, it's part of the fabric of the generation, even us as well now. Everybody is probably spending a good 40% of their time on social media or on the internet in some way.
Helen Fitzgerald, thank you so much.
Thank you.
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production for RadioGorgeous.com. Get in contact with us. Contact us on info@RadioGorgeous.com. And to sign up for our shows to come once a week into your inbox, who can think of anything better, darling?
This has been a Radio Gorgeous production, produced and presented by Donna Freed, edited by Bree Forer.